In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, two issues that have been topics for debate at the Iowa legislature this session: redistricting and the question of whether college athletes should profit from the use of their names, likenesses, and images. Joining me for the entire hour, veteran of Iowa State House reporting, Kathy Obradovich, editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Kathy, welcome back to our program.
Glad to be here, Ben.
Fascinating issues today to discuss with lawmakers. We'll introduce those in just a bit. Kathy, I want you to know, feel free to jump in with any questions you may have, of course, for our lawmakers as we proceed. And reaching out to our listeners as well, note this number if you'd like to join our conversation on these issues: 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Or email us river2river@iowapublicradio.org. As I mentioned, later in the hour, we'll discuss a legislative bill no longer alive this session that would have allowed Iowa college athletes to be the first in the nation to profit from the use of their names, likenesses, and images. In the second half hour, we'll be joined by Nate Bolton, Senator, a Democrat, also Senator Brad Zahn, a Republican. That in the second half hour. But first, let's get to a different issue, Kathy. As it's done with almost every aspect of our lives, this pandemic has disrupted the once a decade practice of redistricting. This is the process by which new congressional and state legislative district boundaries are drawn based on shifts in population within our state. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Republican State Representative Bobby Kaufman and Senate Minority Leader Democrat Zach Walls. But Kathy, get us up to speed. Walk us through the normal process of redistricting the way it's supposed to happen here in Iowa, without a pandemic interfering.
Yes, there's a lot of things that are happening that are just not normal. And one of those is redistricting. So normally in March, the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency would get the data on from the new census on population and start working on maps. And the Iowa's law puts out some pretty specific criteria. Of course, the districts for the legislature and for the U.S. Congress have to be based on population. They have to be contiguous. I mean, they have to have, no weird shapes. They have to be as compact as possible. There are other criteria as well. And it's usually toward the end of the legislative session that first map will appear for the Iowa House and Senate to consider. The House and Senate have to vote the first map up or down without any amendments. And that is another part of making Iowa's process nonpartisan. If they don't pass the first, I believe it's the first couple of maps, they have an opportunity to pass. And without amendment, they can amend the third map. But if they don't get done by September 1st, then the process leaves their hands. And the Iowa legislature has never let this happen since the first court challenge back in the 1970s. If the legislature fails to pass a map in a certain period of time by September 1st, and then the governor has until September 5th to act, then the Supreme Court takes over and draws the maps.
And when you say pass, Kathy, this is by a simple majority in both of the chambers.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, Iowa is unlike many other states in the way it approaches redistricting, and you referenced this because we need to be sort of compact in the way our districts are put together. unlike other states, we have avoided this gerrymandering, manipulating the boundaries of an electoral constituency to favor one party or one group. So how much of a standout, Kathy, is Iowa among states in doing it this way?
We are quite a standout. There's only a few states that have a nonpartisan process. I think Iowa has really been considered a model for the rest of the country. Unfortunately, most of the rest of the country has not followed Iowa. The gerrymandering and partisan redrawing of districts is much more the norm throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. When we reference, strange-looking districts, you can find them in other states. I've heard one described as sort of a strange-looking salamander, and we know that our U.S. Supreme Court has said well, you cannot gerrymander based on race, right? But based on political party, this is where in many other states we get sort of strange maps, isn't it? Because the Supreme Court has not said it's a problem to gerrymander, create districts based on political affiliation.
That's correct. And, if Iowa didn't have it written right into the Constitution that the criteria have to be nonpartisan, it's entirely possible that Iowa would have gone that direction. But the legislature and the voters of Iowa saw fit back in 1968 to amend the Iowa Constitution to make sure that the boundaries are drawn based on population and not on partisanship.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now to bring us up to the very latest before we have our lawmakers join us, last week the Iowa Supreme Court said that it's will make sure that Iowa's redistricting follows, in their words, to the extent possible, this nonpartisan process you just described, laid out in law, if the legislative branch cannot meet the September deadline. Fill us in on that.
Right. So because of the pandemic, the Census Bureau has said that it is not going to get data to the states until the end of September, which is after Iowa's constitutional deadline for getting a map drawn before the Supreme Court takes over. The big question has been, how is the Supreme Court going to handle this? The message that they put out on last week reassures people that they are going to try to make this a nonpartisan process as much as possible. But I think it was a little bit ambiguous on who exactly is going to be drawing and approving these maps. If the Supreme Court is going to, as it suggests, possibly with its reference to Iowa Chapter 42, that it would let the legislature go through that process. Or if they're just saying that they are going to go through the usual process, but it's going to be the Supreme Court doing that process. So I think it'll be interesting to hear, Ben, what your guests made of that statement.
Well, let's have them join us. Just to remind any listeners may have joined us just now, Kathy Obradovich is with us of the Iowa Capitol Dispatch, a long time covering the legislature, the Iowa legislature. Also joining us, two lawmakers we're so pleased to have. Bobby Kaufman is with us, a representative of District 73, that's just east of Iowa City. Representative Kaufman, welcome to you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Also, State Senator Zach Walls, a minority leader in the state Senate from District 37, a Democrat, District 37 in Coralville. Senator Walls, welcome to you.
Good to be with you, Ben.
Let me turn to you, Representative Kaufman, at first. We had sort of the foundation laid there by Kathy Obradovich. Tell us, is it clear to you how this will proceed since the census data looks to be delivered late and the legislature will not be able to meet that September 15th deadline?
I don't think it's clear, but I think the statement brought clarity. And let me explain. It is no fault of the legislatures that we're not going to be able to abide by our constitutionally required timeline. It is zero fault of ours. And so I think what the Supreme Court did is, you know, they had every right to come out and say, well, you guys didn't do it by September 1st. Therefore, game's over, plug's pulled, and we're going to take over. They didn't say that. They said they want to stay as close to process that's current as possible, which is Code Section 42, which is us. So what I envision, and this is purely speculation, this isn't based on any insider knowledge, this is just my own personal, me, myself, and probably maybe nobody else, prediction, is that the Supreme Court, based on that statement, may permit us to continue under the guidelines and confines of Chapter 42 while reserving the right at any time to step in and say, hey, you're not doing this right. That's my prediction on how I think things will go.
Mm-hmm. Senator Walz, from your side of the aisle, do you agree with Representative Kaufman and his admitted speculation there off the top of his head?
Well, I certainly agree that the court statement contains ambiguity. I don't think the court has fully figured out how it will proceed, in part because we don't yet have clarity on when precisely the feds are going to be sending us the census information. I think the most important thing for your listeners to know is that our state has a long tradition of having a very fair redistricting process. Throughout this entire redistricting cycle, which has gone back quite a while now, Democrats and Republicans have agreed that Iowa has a fantastic process and that we want to keep it that way. As Representative Kaufman pointed out, the issue that has arisen is not one at the state level, it really is one at the federal level. In terms of how things will shake out if the Federal Census Bureau information is delayed in order for them to make sure that the information is correct, I think it's still an open question as to how exactly things are going to play out, in part because there's an open question around when the information will arrive here in the state of Iowa.
Senator Walz, is there a possible scenario that would most concern you going forward with so many sort of unclear aspects at this point?
I think the thing that concerns me the most is the prospect that we would try to draw maps without the best possible data. It's incredibly difficult to do the census in the best of circumstances. Doing it in the middle of a global pandemic is exceptionally difficult and takes it to a whole nother level. And so I understand that the Trump administration was having issues sorting out information before the transition to the Biden administration in January. The Biden administration obviously has inherited that challenge, and I know that they're doing their best. And so I think the thing that would be concerning to me is rushing this process. It's so important. The maps are going to be with us for a full decade. We've got to make sure that we do it right.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kaufman, do you share that chief concern that Senator Walz just voiced?
I think every single one of my colleagues shares that concern. I don't know of anybody that wants to proceed with inaccurate data. I would concur with Senator Walz that accurate data is paramount. We have to have that. We have to do our diligence. We need to take our time because we're stuck with this for the better part of a decade. And I think, not the better part of, for a decade. And mm-hmm. I think the Supreme Court decision left a window open for us to be able to take our time, because when they ambiguously said they'd like to be able to follow Chapter 42, which is us drawing the maps, that says to me there's a possibility, no guarantee, but a possibility that we'll be able to work on these maps after September and October and November, when we can take our time and have accurate data, all the while with the Supreme Court overseeing us, making sure that no nefarious business happens.
Representative Kaufman, does the legislature have any recourse to get the census data before that constitutional deadline? I know Senator Whitfer has mentioned possibility of a lawsuit. At least one other state has filed suit. Do you think that that is a realistic possibility?
I'm not specifically aware of a particular thing we can do at this moment, but I'll keep my eyes open. Anything any of us can do, Democrat or Republican, to encourage the data to come quicker while still being accurate is something I think we'd all be interested in. I mean, you look at the LSA deadlines of, for instance, the 35 days that they're allowed to proceed in between maps, were we to be able to vote on them and then have the time frame in between. I know LSA has said that sometimes it might not take a full 35 days, but again, that's predetermined based off of them having actual accurate information. So I'm not aware of a specific tool we have. I don't know if a lawsuit would be amenable, but I can tell you that I think all of my colleagues want accurate data.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Kathy.
Okay, well, I'll bring in Senator Walz here in a second, but just staying with Representative Kopman, do you envision the legislature taking any kind of action through statute, either to ensure that the legislature can keep control of the process despite the deadline, or going forward, you'd have to amend the Constitution, obviously, but to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again?
I don't.
Sorry.
I don't see that happening, Kathy. Simply, I think, and this is where Representative Kaufman was going a moment ago, is that this is an exceptionally unusual circumstance. This is very much the exception and not the rule. And so I don't see, and to your point, the deadline is in the Constitution. It's not in the code. So changing the Constitution is obviously a multi-year process. And I mean, Lord knows, hopefully there won't be another global pandemic the next time we're doing the census.
Representative Kaufman, I think you wanted to weigh in on Kathy's question there.
My apologies. I was just confused on who she was asking. I would concur. You can't change the Constitution in one session. There's no intentions to change the Constitution. And so I see the Supreme Court's ruling as giving us an opportunity to be involved while still adhering to our current constitutional requirements.
But just to follow up, you don't have any guarantee that you might not have a global pandemic in the future or some other crisis that would delay the legislature getting census data. Is there a reason to consider amending the Constitution, not obviously for the next decade, but looking forward into the future?
You're the first person to ever ask you that question. I've had nobody approach me about that. I've had no thoughts about that. That, to me, I would just agree with Senator Walz. This is the exception, not the rule. And I guess I wouldn't have any interest in that myself. I don't, it's worked fine for the last four decades. I'm going to trust that it's going to work fine for the next four. And I'm not saying it's not going to work out fine this time. It's just going to be a little bit delayed.
I'd agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Senator Walz, well, this is really a question for both of you. But Senator Walz, you first of all, when we talk about Iowa's redistricting process being a really nonpartisan model for the country, a model that has not been followed by other states. Other leaders are in office because of gerrymandered districts. Ours are not that case. But it seems that both main parties in Iowa are proud of this tradition. Do you feel that there is a real bipartisan desire to keep this above all, or do you see some disagreement with the other major party in any way in keeping this tradition?
No, I think there is strong bipartisan support, and we've already heard it already here on the program today for Iowa's current system. I certainly do not expect any changes to how we draw maps here in Iowa. I certainly haven't heard anybody say or even any speculation that would happen. So I don't have any concerns in terms of our current system, and I really do see it as a model that other states could follow. Obviously, there's no only way to do this. There's not necessarily even a quote-unquote best way, but the way that we have is, I think, unique in the country, having the maps drawn by nonpartisan legislative experts, folks who do not have to curry favor with Democrats or Republicans. Of course, the legislature has to approve the maps, which is a natural part of the process. But in terms of changes to the system, I certainly haven't heard of any, and I don't think that there would be support in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party for changes to the system at this time.
Representative Kaufman, if Iowa is such a spectacular model for the country, and this is self-evident, I'm sure, to you, Senator Walz, and other lawmakers, explain to our listeners why it is not followed if it is held in such high esteem here as a nonpartisan model.
Why is it not followed by whom?
By other states.
I can't speak to that. You know, I know there's Democrat-controlled states where they've got rules that people don't agree with. There's Republican-controlled states that have rules that not everybody agrees with. You know, I can't speculate as to why others will not adopt what we have as a as an ideal model. I guess I would just encourage them to do so.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kaufman, how does this affect your caucus's ability to recruit candidates and organize campaigns for the 2022 cycle? It's always a little bit of uncertainty during a redistricting year, and I would think that this situation ramps it up quite a bit.
Well, it affects both parties and both caucuses the exact same, and the answer is a lot. You can't, it's tough to convince somebody to run against an individual, whether they're a Democrat challenging a Republican or vice versa, if you don't even know that your residency is going to be in the very district that you're choosing to attempt to challenge. So, you know, I'm all for accurate data, and we need to, that should be the benchmark, is accurate data. But it's also time sensitive. If you've got people that are considering running for office, you know, that's a constitutional right as well, to be able to, I mean, not to run for office, but your right to have your voice heard in an election. If you choose to have your voice heard by running for office, there's not a way to do that until we get this data done. So I think it's critical for both parties.
And same question to Senator Walz. Is this messing you up in terms of trying to get candidates to run and start to organize, even for your incumbents, for the next election?
Well, sure. It certainly, as we've discussed, introduces a level of ambiguity. And I think that we have both potential challengers as well as incumbents who are in a holding pattern, essentially, until we have more clarity about what districts are going to look like. In terms of how it affects recruiting specifically, I would agree with Representative Kaufman. It affects both Democrats and Republicans, and it affects both the House and the Senate. And in some ways, maybe even more so in the Senate, because typically you only have half of the chamber up. You have 25 senators in each two-year cycle because we have a four-year term. One of the challenges with redistricting is that sometimes you can have somebody who is just elected or reelected in the most recent campaign cycle, in this case 2020, who, because of how the lines get changed, may be in a district that is holding an election in 2022. And so there's, of course, I think, just kind of another bit of an X factor there. But in terms of the big picture perspective, it'll slow down the process to some extent. I mean, maybe some listeners at home won't mind if the campaign season gets off to a slightly slower start than usual. But I think it certainly is going to result in an unusual process. But I don't think it'll advantage one party or another.
Okay, we have a few seconds. Representative Kaufman, 20 seconds. Anything left to say on this issue before we move on?
I just want to make it crystal clear that Iowa is the gold standard of the country. House Republicans have zero intentions to change it. I think that's the same for House Democrats, Senate Republicans, and Senate Democrats. We want to keep our process the way that it is, which is the gold standard.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. Representative Bobby Kaufman, District 73, State Senator Zach Walz, a Senate Minority Leader, Democrat from Coralville. Thank you very much for joining us this hour. Kathy Obradovich will stay with us into our second half hour. When we come back, we'll talk about a bill no longer alive this session that would have allowed college athletes to be the first in the nation to profit from the use of their names. Back in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River.
The legislative session is scheduled for 110 days. And there will be hundreds of bills proposed this year.
I would like to call the subcommittee meeting to order.
From subcommittees to committees.
I really want to support this bill.
To the chamber floor.
Every senator has voted. The secretary will close the voting system.
Our weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome, walks you through the legislative process. I'm John Pimple. Subscribe to Under the Golden Dome with your podcast listening program or hear it at iowapublicradio.org.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, I'll be joined by Congressman, U.S. Congressman Ro Khanna of California. Why would he be on this program? Well, with his seat on the House Ag Committee, Representative Khanna wants to put the full force of Silicon Valley, which is in his district, behind rural revitalization here in Iowa and in other states. Tomorrow on the program, U.S. Congressman Ro Khanna. Well, this hour, I'm together with Kathy Obradovich. She's editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. We're discussing a couple of legislative issues in the first half hour. If you were with us, redistricting and the holdup there caused by the late data from the U.S. Census, caused by, of course, the pandemic. Well, let's talk this half hour about a legislative bill that would have allowed Iowa college athletes to be first in the nation to profit from the use of their names, their likenesses, and images. The bill is dead for this session, but we want to discuss the issue because college athletes being compensated for the use of their name is a national conversation. Should athletes be compensated for the use of their names and images when in the college professional sphere? Join our conversation this half hour, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. In just a moment, we'll be joined by two Iowa lawmakers. But first of all, Kathy, tell us a little bit more about this bill and give us some background.
Yeah, so first of all, this is an interesting bill in part because it is bipartisan. Senator Brad Zahn, and who's a Republican from Urbandale, and Senator Nate Bolton from Des Moines, a Democrat, has introduced the bill 2 years in a row, and the bill has never really gotten through the legislative deadlines. But it always generates some news interest and a lot of discussion in the state. Iowa would have had this legislation go into effect on July 1. Under the bill, the state colleges, the universities couldn't stop their student athletes from being compensated for things like the use of their name or their image or their likeness. So if they're on a Wheaties box, you know, or something like that, that they could actually get paid for that. And, you know, I think that this is something that the NCAA, which really is the arbiter of a lot of the rules dealing with college athletics, they have looked at this and have not opposed it, but they also haven't moved forward with any of their own rules on this front.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, before we welcome Senators Bolton and Zahn, what have been the arguments? What can you tell us about the arguments against doing this, keeping the status quo?
Well, I mean, one argument would be that the state of Iowa shouldn't get out ahead of the NCAA or other states, that there's concern that, you know, maybe this is something that should be a national movement as opposed to Iowa acting unilaterally. So that's one thing, you know, and, you know, I think that we'll talk to our guests about this, but there's always concern when you're talking about paying athletes that there could be problems with ethics or that there could be there issues related to, for example, I mean, Iowa now has sports betting. You know, there's a lot of issues dealing with the ethics of this and, you know, people, frankly, just maybe not wanting to see the system change from the way it has been for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our two state senators are with us. State Senator Nate Bolton, a Democrat from Des Moines. Welcome to our program, Senator Bolton.
Thank you, and thanks for discussing this.
And Senator Brad Zahn from Urbandale, a Republican. Senator Zahn, welcome to you.
Well, good to be with you.
Okay, so you both teamed up in putting this legislation forward. It's dead for this session. Senator Zahn, let's start with you. What are the main reasons you think Iowa should be in the forefront here, take the lead in changing this?
Well, first of all, the state of Florida just passed similar legislation. And so right off the bat, if we're recruiting any athletes that are looking at Florida colleges, we're at a big disadvantage because they are going to move forward with allowing those athletes, student athletes, to be able to compensate it in regards to their name, image, and likeness. That's a big thing. And I think and Senator Bolton could correct me if I'm wrong, I think New Mexico just recently passed legislation in regards to being able to do the same thing. So right now we're at a disadvantage of all the colleges in Iowa because of that. But with that said, It's really not fair to these student athletes. The reality is that most of these athletes are not going to go on and play professional sports. Basketball in particular is a very slim margin of people that get that opportunity. And there is literally millions and millions of dollars that are being made. And what was brought to my attention is just the video games. You talked about name, image, and likeness. There's literally millions, if not billions, of dollars made there. So I think it's an issue that we need to have a conversation about.
Senator Bolton, what do you have to add to Senator Zahn's words?
Well, the reality is that these athletes have their names, images, and likeness being marketed and profited from right now. It's just a matter of they are the only ones being excluded from any profitability from that. And as Senator Zahn just pointed out, many of these athletes will be at the high watermark and the value of their name, image, or likeness during their college athletic career. And what effectively the policy is right now is to tell them they cannot engage in marketing their own face, their own name, until it has been devalued. And so that just does not feel right, shouldn't feel right in a free market capitalism sense. It shouldn't feel right from a individual rights sense. So I think that's why we have the two of us coming together trying to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. And Senator, go ahead, Kathy.
Senator Zahn, I just wanted to, you made a little bit of a change in the bill this year, Senator Zahn. Why change the bill to eliminate the requirement that student athletes maintain at least some of their earnings in a trust fund until they're no longer eligible? Why make that change?
Well, because of what some of the other states have passed. And really, we obviously, this is an issue that's evolving. This is an issue that people need to be educated at. We're trying to make our bill a better bill. And Senator Bolton and I have worked one-on-one. Senator Bolton probably even put more efforts in this than I have. But that's the reason.
And you mentioned Iowa is at a disadvantage. Do you mean in recruiting athletes?
That is correct. I mean, right now, an athlete might be looking at a Florida college that will allow that athlete to be able to make money off of his name, image, or likeness. Where, first of all, they're down there in a better environment, climate-wise, which puts us at a disadvantage already. But most importantly, you know, that might be something that might make the difference. I think it was demonstrated with our great Iowa Hawkeye basketball player, Bohannon, that said, hey, listen, I'm considering this and would consider staying back in the state of Iowa and run, you know, playing another year if this bill passed. So I really do believe there's become a lot more awareness on this, which is going to put Iowa at a disadvantage.
And Senator Bolton, I mean, the trust fund might have been a little bit of an assurance to people who are concerned about ethics. They're concerned about the ability for somebody on the outside to maybe put an undue amount of influence on an athlete. What other safeguards are in the bill to ensure that the ability to compensate athletes doesn't lead to ethical problems?
Great question. And yes, we are very concerned about that. And we want to make sure we are doing our part, not only to protect the rights of these individual college athletes, but also protect them from any, you know, unscrupulous activities. We have some things in the legislation that allow the compensation to be in the form of housing or other things that, you know, would be hard for someone to abuse in a sense, and hold over someone. Also, we have registration of any third party agent that is out there that is representing an athlete or a group of athletes. So we have somewhat of a vetting process to make sure that there is at least some minimal standards on who is, you know, representing or influencing any athlete in their decisions, and make sure they're qualified to do so.
Senator Zahn, your party has been in control of both chambers in Des Moines for the last few years. Tell us why this bipartisan effort by you and Senator Bolton has failed to advance. Is it simply not a high priority, or are there some real sticking points that your colleagues in the Senate have?
Well, there are certainly some concerns. I want to make it very clear to everyone that we don't want to ruin college athletics. I mean, it's a great model that the way it is right now. But honestly, it hasn't risen to the highest level that it needs to be. I did pass this through the Judiciary Committee. So for the first time, it actually went through a committee. And at the end, we ran out of time. And most importantly, there wasn't anything alive in the Iowa House. I had assurances from our leader, Senator Whitfer, who is a former student athlete himself at Iowa State, that we are going to work on this and put a lot more efforts in this. And I need to do a better job with Senator Bolton's help to educate some people in the House. But this is definitely an issue that is not going to go away. And it's going to be something that I want to make sure that we work on next session.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to our phones, if we could, before we say goodbye to our lawmakers. Paul is joining us from Story City. Paul, welcome to the program. You want to weigh in on this issue? Welcome.
Well, thank you. There are two things, really. Number one, fully scholarship athletes at our universities are very hardworking people who have to put in a lot of extra time, and it's a very rugged life. But when they walk out on campus, they're surrounded by other students who are incurring a lot of debt to get their education, and they don't have that. On the other hand, number two, if you elect to pay college athletes, I think everyone should be paid. If certain athletes are able to profit from their image and their notoriety, it's going to go to the skill players in football or the most visible players in other sports, and I think that's unfair. If you pay college athletes, pay them all.
Mm. Interesting. Paul, let me get the reaction to your comments from our state senators. Nate Bolton, please react to what Paul, the concerns that Paul has there.
Yeah, so this is one thing that comes up a lot is if an athlete is on a full athletic scholarship, isn't that enough? And the first thing we would say to that is, well, we have several people that are on full academic scholarships that are able to work outside of their academic area and profit from things that they can do and can, have ownership over their own name, image, and likeness. So there are athletes out there that are on full scholarship that should be treated just like an academic full scholarship student. The other thing I would say to the point of that is we have a number of college athletes who are not on scholarship, who are walk-ons, who are not getting those benefits. So to say to them that because some of the members of the team have full scholarships, you shouldn't engage in name, image, likeness, profitability is pretty unfair as well. And then to the question regarding fairness between positions and players, there are all kinds of things that lead to differences to how a quarterback is treated on the football team by the public and their marketability and profitability and their media attention. And a member of the defensive line. And that's not going to be created by any of this. This is just going to be part of that system that already exists. We're just trying to eliminate one major inequity.
Mm-hmm. Senator Zond, does Senator Bolton's words echo your thoughts as well?
100%.
Okay.
I don't have anything to add.
All right, let's go to another caller. Let's go to Jeff in West Des Moines. Welcome to the program, Jeff. What's your angle on this conversation?
Well, I wasn't able to hear the prior caller, but I suspect we have some overlap. I look at this as an issue of equity, as this restriction on name, image, and likeness remuneration is limited 100% to student athletes. There are no other athletes, no other students within the Regent schools, nor the other schools, to my knowledge, that have any similar restriction. And Representative Bolton, he kind of made the point I was going to, is whether you have a full or partial academic scholarship, there are no restrictions about how else you choose to supplement your income. And there are some tremendous stories of inequity. Jay Billis, the ESPN commentator, does a good job publicizing these on people that have attempted to make some money with only the slightest tangential connection to their athletic career, and they have they've been eliminated from eligibility. And I just think the equity issue is certainly very much the focus in my mind with this, and I'd appreciate their comments.
Okay. Senator Zond, can we turn to you first of all here?
Yeah, I'm, you know, he makes some very good points. As again, we're not trying to, this is really about educating people. You know, there's so many student athletes that, as Senator Bolton said, that they're at their high water mark. They're the hometown heroes. There's opportunities to have a camp or that all these younger people in the area look up to. This is a matter of fairness. I certainly understand the argument about, you know, the full scholarships. And by the way, those scholarships are not paid by us taxpayers. They're paid by the universities in their athletic departments. But with that said, it's really about allowing these athletes to be able to get compensated. We all go to these games, and we can see jerseys that are out there, the number that's the star of that year, and maybe for 10 or decades later, you're still going to see that at these games. And that's what we're trying to accomplish here. And the other thing is, if we don't do this, and if the NCAA doesn't do anything about it, we are going to be at a disadvantage here in the state of Iowa in regards to our recruitment of our athletes. If all these other states are allowing this to happen and we don't do it in Iowa. So I think it's worthy to have a conversation, most importantly, to educate everybody about this issue.
Mm-hmm. We have
Senator Bolton, I obviously some players have made their thoughts known about this legislation. I'm wondering if you have heard from coaches here in Iowa, you know, do they think this is a good idea? Would it help them with recruiting?
Great question. We certainly have had a lot of engagement from college athletes, and I've had a few discussions with university administrators and athletic directors, and we'll continue to do that, as well as our government relations folks from the Regent schools. But yes, we have a lot more conversations to have on this. One thing I want to point out, going back to this equity issue, this is a big deal in terms of equity for female student athletes. One of the people that we talked with about this legislation was Caitlin Clark. It's very clear that when we talk about, you know, the maximum value for name, image, likeness in the state of Iowa, whether it's Megan Gustafson or Caitlin Clark, they're going to see their best opportunity for name, image, likeness marketing and profitability from that during that college career, especially with the kind of careers that those two athletes have had. So when we talk about equity, we cannot ignore the fact that particularly for women in sports, those college years are really the moment that they have in terms of finding that ability to market their name, image, likeness. And right now, the NCAA policy is to prevent them from doing that whatsoever. And that, again, that just is really unfair to those athletes.
Let me share with you, perhaps get a reaction to one of our listeners' emails. Janet, in an email, writes, having attended Iowa State for 2 degrees and knowing that many student athletes are on scholarships, what is being done to make sure that all students get compensated? These scholarship students, athletes, won't graduate with thousands of dollars of education debt. My point is that these athletes are already being compensated. And then she writes, .. no education bill. Senator Zahn, perhaps we're covering a little bit of what we covered before, but how do you respond to Janet?
You're basically the same as what I've said before. If there is a student there that is, that there's a situation where they're name, image, and likeness is being made as a non-athlete, I'd be interested to have that conversation. But this is the start of the conversation, and it's, again, about fairness.
Okay. We have just a couple minutes left. Let's squeeze in one more caller from Indianola. Kurt is with us. Have to ask you to be snappy here, Kurt, but welcome to the program. What's your question or concern?
Well, thanks. I've got a son who's a college athlete, and, I think to Mr. Zahn's point, this is going to become the baseline. I don't think we'll enhance our recruiting in the end because I think everybody will have this. So it's the baseline. One way or another, we're going to have to adapt to it. But the question I have is, so we've got, hundreds, if not thousands of kids on Twitter and Instagram that use images of their former school, a picture of them and their Iowa football equipment or whatever. And I think it's fantastic, but the concern I would have is, does this cut both ways? Do these kids then open themselves up to the university going, hey, you know, you profited from our image or likeness.
Hmm. Senator Bolton, would you want to tackle that one?
Sure. And absolutely does cut both ways. Any athlete who's using an image that isn't owned by that athlete is going to have to square that with whoever took the picture or published the photo. So, you know, I see this as an extension of all we're really trying to accomplish is to make sure the student athlete, that college athlete, has equal footing in ownership of their own image, of their own name, of their own likeness, rather than being the only one frozen out from any of this.
Okay, we've run out of... Go ahead, quickly, yes.
Well, I was just going to say, I totally agree with that. I just wonder if everybody's cognizant of the genie that's coming out of the bottle there, if you agree with that statement. You know, I mean, there's literally thousands of kids who have, you know, pictures of themselves playing football, and they're trying to, you know, do speaking engagements or camps or clinics. And I'm sure that in their own mind, you know, they feel like they were entitled to use that picture of themselves.
Okay, Kurt in Indianola. Yep, great point, Kurt. Thank you very much for your input. Our listener, Kurt, from Indianola, want to thank our guests, Senators Nate Bolton and Brad Zahn. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. And
thank you,
Kathy Obradovich, Editor-in-Chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Thank you for spending the hour with me as well, Kathy.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River, produced today by Matt Alvarez. Our Catherine Perkins is our executive editor. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Iowa is known far and wide for corn and soybeans, but those of us who live here know that Iowa is so much more. I'm Charity Nebbe. From agriculture to high culture, each day on Talk of Iowa, I talk to farmers, artists, authors, musicians, scientists, athletes, and others who make Iowa what it is. Talk of Iowa, weekday mornings at 10 on Iowa Public Radio.